The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to that space on a Sunday afternoon where you get to enjoy life, kick back, relax, listen to a conversation and think deep thoughts, argue with the radio or the computer or the telephone or whichever medium you are consuming us through. If it's your tablet, try not to throw it to the ground in disgust. But in any case, welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is, as you will probably have figured out by now, one Kyle Quincy Parker. I'm joined today, as usual, by my very distracted partner in crime. And I did warn him that there was a piece of equipment that could have alleviated the thing that is distracting him now. But no, he chose to go his own way and do his own thing. So whatever happens next is on him. Matthew B. Kelly.
A very merry unbirthday to you, sir. A very merry unbirthday. Once again, a very merry unbirthday to you.
Okay. So none of us know what Matthew means, but that's okay, because we rarely do.
Excuse me. I'm sure more than a few people have grown up on classic Disney, so I reject your accusation.
You can reject away, but that does not mean you are right.
Not only is it on birthday, but we should have recorded. We didn't, due to circumstances beyond anyone's control, but on a Thursday, at which point it would have been a happy Thursday. But here we are.
None of that translates to any of us listening to what you are saying.
Although I was ready for Thursday, but anyway, I've not been introduced yet, but I was ready for Thursday in the event that Matthew thinks that the Thursday didn't happen because of me.
I do not.
Okay.
In any ill circumstance, my first instinct is to go to Quincy.
It's not only me.
This is going as the gals them say, this could be long.
This could be long. This going sound quick.
Yeah. So, obviously you will have heard his voice before. You, those of you who are listeners to the airwaves, especially on a Sunday afternoon, where you are more often than not transported in clouds of glorious incense into the higher realms of existence by his show Sacred Sounds. Those of you who have seen him conduct choirs throughout the length and breadth of this Commonwealth, those of you who may have on occasion heard him throw a tantrum, will know him.
Moi?
You can't even say it with a straight face. We'll know him and love him nonetheless. Welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society, Adrian Archer.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
The Walter is a part of it somewhere.
It is, yes.
I know that with me, there are people who know me by one name, which I associate with one particular group of people, and then people who call me the other name
yes.
Are the people who think I'm a nice person.
Yes, exactly.
So I will
leave. Vanishingly fuel. By the show. You know we love you, Quincy. You know
the,
we love
the
you.
The thing is, right, when we're off, away from this context, Matthew delights in telling people that I'm the mean one. That I'm the one that's always throwing blows. But I think that this, just this introduction is by itself a dissertation.
Of truth.
Yes.
No. Don't get your poor sampling done. Because this is an
Notice,
anomaly.
Any sampling
this is
that
me.
I do is poor.
This is me mixing it up.
Right. Sure. You forget, this is a medium that is recorded. So all anyone has to do is go back and listen to the other shows, and they will see.
I invite them to and send me the data. But I think that I'm being so loud up front here because I will have very little to say for the rest of this show as I don't have a musical bone in my body. And this is just going to be a learning experience for moi.
I disagree violently, actually.
I told him so already.
Yeah, this is not a this isn't a music show. This is a culture show. This is a show... about how we think and what we value. Music might be the medium for a part of the conversation, but no, it's not a music show at all. In fact, the show is called the Sunday Scotch Society. And one of the things that makes it the Sunday Scotch Society is the fact that we sip a nice single malt or blended scotch while we have the conversation on the show. And this week...
And does the scotch help with the conversation, or does the scotch loosen up the guest's mouth to say things that they will regret later?
So far, it's been 50-50. Okay.
Listen, the scotch is because Matthew and I like scotch.
Okay.
We are inviting people into a conversation that we're already having. And that conversation happens to be over a nice glass of scotch.
Okay.
So, you know, it is what it is. This week, we will continue with this, the Jameson Black Barrel Triple Distilled
so
Irish Whiskey.
So nice. You do it twice.
Yes. You finished?
So what happens if you have a guest that doesn't drink scotch or any of the above?
We invite you to listen to the back catalog. I didn't realize that I knew so many teetotalers personally.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's peripheral information, but like most of the interesting ones that I've invited so far have refused to take a tipple.
Which is odd, given that the name of the show is the Sunday Scotch Society.
When I first heard it, I thought it was just the name of the show. Until I saw a photograph, and I thought, they're actually drinking scotch. Who actually drinks scotch?
To be clear, we're not shooting scotch.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
We are slowly sipping.
Sipping it, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is how you drink scotch, in any event. there we go. I will pour for Matthew I will pour for Adrian.
So this is to be drunk slowly.
Very.
This is not you drink it back and horse it back kind of
thing. We'll have to take you to the hospital.
So as so many things in life, it depends on your goal.
Okay,
this
there
is
we are.
Very true.
This is true. Okay.
Very true.
However, I do not recommend the
crossing it back at all.
No.
If your intention is to maintain a level.
Oh, it smells interesting.
A level of cognizance and consciousness.
Yeah, you know,
don't horse it.
Okay, all right.
Tell us what you mean by interesting.
Well, it smells like, and it's far away from me, really. I can't say what it smells like. I'm not a drinker of anything other than communion wine.
We're aware of this.
And maybe, you know, very, very, very light wine. But it smells, I'm trying to think of what it smells something like some sort of, I don't know, there's a scent around Christmas and fall and acorns and that sort of stuff.
Okay,
it reminds me of when I was in university and that smell around fall time, around old leaves, and that's what it reminds me of away.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I think of right away.
Yeah. So there's like cinnamon, like
nutmeg. Yeah, that's like what it smells like.
I definitely see those notes in it. For me, aside from the alcohol, obviously, one of the primary notes is like extra ripe fruit.
Okay.
But that's something that I think I pick up on more because I've tasted it and I know that that's in there.
It's in there. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know if I'm fooling myself, but I kind of feel like I smell it on the nose too.
Okay.
Matthew is, as usual, studying the nose quite intently.
Well, as still a noob.
By now, you can't consider yourself a noob.
Yeah,
you are a neophyte or a tyro at the least. You're no longer a noob.
After a few short weeks, months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. So this is getting dangerously close to some of the more tolerable fruitcakes.
That's what it smells like. Thank you very much. Yeah. That's what it smells like.
And as we have established on this podcast,
that's exactly what it smells like.
Fruitcake is the devil's confection, and should not exist in this world. But
and my grandmother,
it's in Quincy's face. It's just so easy to.
My grandmother would make fruitcake 6 months out. And pour this stuff over it every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that by the time you got to the fruitcake, it was just a puddle.
Yes.
It was a puddle. You cut it and it was just like a slob. Boom. And you only could take this little bit because then you had to go and lay down. It was just... It was, God rest her soul. It was. It used to be in foil. I can see it now. Mm. Packs of it in a cupboard. And you'd say, what's happening? Oh, don't worry, it's my fruitcakes. So why are fruitcakes being made in July?
Because they are soaking.
And it's literally soaking.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Suzette's mother makes her fruitcake. Well, Diana doesn't make the fruitcake anymore. The children make the fruitcake
right now,
according to her recipe. I can't tell you how many days of just stirring that, oh my god, like half of my bicep mass is from stirring those things, right? Yeah. But it's like Meyer's dark rum is the liquor that she uses. And from like you say, like July, August, September, she starts with the milk. And every week, one of the children's duties is to go through all of those Ziploc bags.
pour
in the rum. And make sure that the cake is moist. When I tell you those, that fruitcake lasted. I remember we took a tin back from Nassau to Tulsa when we were living in Tulsa. And somehow the tin got put up in a closet somewhere. I found it a year and change later.
Still good.
Still good!
Oh, yeah. It's like the dead. The Egyptian dead. They've been
pickled.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yes. Well, anyway, so that is the rum, the Scotch in this instance.
It's okay.
The Jameson's Black Barrel. And I know you're not a drinker, so I encourage you to, at the very least, maybe wet your lips and see what it feels like. But it's worth it.
Okay.
If you're willing to
try it.
Okay. Yeah. So, you are, me and Siri could fight, but anyway, you are most recently, for the purposes of our conversation, back from your jaunts as a judge of the National Arts Festival. When did you get back from that? August, September?
It ended in late It ended just before independence.
Right.
Okay. For independence ceremony.
Right.
So that would be early July.
Early July. And
from February. Mm-hmm. It started in February.
What did you... I'm just going to ask some foundational questions before we get into whatever rant or screed we may have. But what did you find as... You know what, before I ask you that, let me ask you to give people a sense of your bona fides in music. I think that one of the things that people sometimes forget is that we do have experts in their craft here in the Bahamas. And a person like yourself, with the training and natural talent that you have, is rightly considered an expert. So tell us a little bit about that. Go from your childhood, if you don't mind me.
Okay.
Asking, yeah.
Well, first of all, this is embarrassing.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
But I grew up in a household of music. My grandmother, the late Agnes Archer, was an organist at St. Matthew's Church for 70 years. Mm. And my father, who is my grandmother's son, married, of course, my mother. And she was a student of my grandmother. Mm. So she was a student of Agnes Archer. And she became the organist at St. George's at the age of 15. And so I was in a household of music on both ends of my family, my father's side, my mother's side. So I ended up playing for Sunday school, I think at the age of 6, because my mother had me at the organ learning how to play. All my brothers and sisters, though my brother couldn't play a lick, my sister could play, but my brother just was not into that. Mm-hmm. and so I was always around musical spaces, mm-hmm. either at St. Matthew's with my grandmother or at St. George's with my mother. And I ended up being the choir director at St. George's, because it wasn't the choir director. So when I was in St. John's in high school, I ended up being, when I say choir director, waving my hands and helping out the choir.
Of course.
That's what I ended up being.
Yeah.
Because now I am a choir director, and so I could understand the difference. I decided when I was about 16 or 15 that I wanted to be a priest. And I had already gone to the ordinance committee, the diocese, so they call it commission on ministry. But I was too young when I came out of St. John's to go off to seminary. And so Clement Maynard, God bless his soul, was the chairman of the commission on ministry for the diocese of the Bahamas. And he said to me, until you turn 18, why don't you come and work for me at the ministry of tourism? And so I left St. John's at 16, and I took those 2 years at ministry of tourism, and I started off in the information department. And I turned my back on Jesus from then and never looked at it anymore until 24 or 5 years later. didn't turn my back on Jesus. You know I didn't mean that, Lord. But I never went back to the priesthood idea anymore. I spent the rest of the 20-odd years working in the ministry of tourism and working through information into promotions, into public relations. I worked to form the first audiovisual unit of the Ministry of Tourism, mm-hmm. and I got a scholarship to study in Fort Lauderdale with that and came back and set that up. And then I moved into PR directly, and I ended up being the manager of PR. And when tourism burnt down in the early, I don't remember when it was now, 90s, I guess. No, it was early, right into the 90s, into 2000. We were in different satellite offices. The Ministry of Tourism's office, public relations office, was at the Hotel Hilton. There were offices all over the place. And I remember saying to myself, by that time I had encountered all those years I had been at the cathedral as singing in the choir. I had encountered people like Fred Fleischer and Brother Paul, all these musicians, Clement Maynard and Kayla Lockhart Edwards. These are the people that were the staple of my life throughout the whole time that I worked at the government. And over again, they would say, man, you said, you know, you're really good at singing, you're really good at this. And I enjoyed choir and music more than I enjoyed working in the 9-to-5 job. Mm. And I always said Quincy when I was growing up there. And whenever I got to the point where I came into the office and I sucked my teeth out of disgust, I would resign that day. What I would do, I have no idea what that would be, but I would resign and I would leave because I never wanted to go someplace where it annoyed me to be for 8 hours of the day. That day came in 2000 and I guess 2002. Our offices were located at where Micronet is now in Palmdale. Father Fred Fleischer, God rest the dead, had said to me just that year, he said, you know, Adrian, you're turning 39, you're going to be 40. You really, really should go and explore your musical side before you get too old to explore it. Now, what you're going to do with it, I don't know. But every time I see you, every time I hear you, every time you sing, every time you conduct, I always say to myself, if it's one thing I must do is convince you to do this. And that day came, and I said to myself, this job is driving me crazy. And then it hit me that I could just leave. Now, that was a stupid idea because my mother was hysterical at the thought that I, who was, had been working for 20 odd years for the government, would resign and give up what would be my pension and start again. That was in her mind, that I would start working again.
Yeah.
And I called Vincent Mandible Wallace, who was Director General at the time, and I said, well, Vincent, I'm going to resign. And he said, what do you mean resign? So I said, well, I don't want to work anymore. And he said, well, what are you going to do? So I said, but I'm going to work for the church. He said, you can leave the government to work for the church. The church is worse than working for the government. I can hear him right now. And he said it to me. And I said, that may be so. But I have another option. And just give me what you owe me, my pension, because I was a contracted worker, my whatever's owed to me, and I will leave. And he said, I give you one day to think about it. And the next day, Obi Wilchcombe called me because the government, he was the new minister, and he said, I want to see you. And I knew what he wanted to see me for because I knew Vincent. I told him. I went to his office, and he said, you cannot seriously be thinking of resigning. I said, well, seriously, here's the letter. And I'm taking it upstairs to human resources, and I'm going to need to have all my vacation pay and whatever, and I'm going to leave. Well, that's what I did. It was unpopular with my mother, who I hold above all others in terms of my advice. It was unpopular with my siblings, and I decided I would audition for music school, which I did over the phone. I applied to go to Princeton. I auditioned over the phone. I did all my interviews over the phone. And when I got a call that I was accepted, I said, well, I'll take whatever couple of $1,000 they gave me, and I'm going to go and figure out how to pay for the rest. And that's what I did. And I'm telling you, I have not regretted that move ever. If there's only one thing I ever did right in my life, it was that leap of faith. And I was 41. I wasn't 21.
Yes.
I was 41 when I went off to study that at that level. And it was an odd experience because I was studying with children.
Yes, yes.
Children, yes. Literally 17, 18-year-old children, you know, from all parts of the world. Princeton is an incredibly beautiful place. Its music scene is incredible. You're in the tri-state area, so you have the New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia, many orchestras and choruses and so forth. And I took advantage of being there and not living on the campus by associating myself with as many local musicians as I possibly could. I got a good church job. I got into a place where I could get a lot of experience running a church ministry as a musician. I got to work with Princeton for Music, which is a professional orchestra and chorus. I got to be an intern with a number of really important people in the world, in the musical world, Joseph Flummerfelt, among all these people whose names in the choral world are the pinnacle of that world. So that is what I did. Now, when it was time to come back, you know,
yeah,
it was a rough life.
Yeah.
Because I recall specifically I graduated. I was the first Bahamian to graduate from the university with that degree. I had a lot of people come over to support me. And when I was leaving, I went to say goodbye to the head of my department. And he said, listen, you can't do this. You really have to stay. We will let you teach. But Could you please stay and do your doctorate degree and go and visit?
Yes.
Ah, God bless. If it wasn't for my mother,
I would not have.
No. Yeah. No, and I understand the brain drain very, very well, particularly in this business, because people think that you are a musician and it's your hobby, and you offer your gifts to the Lord. But the Lord didn't pay my school fees. So I want to say this right now to people who are listening. If you have a good musician, pay them. Because, particularly if you have a trained musician, none of this is pie in the sky. You know what I mean? Now, thankfully, I get to work in a place that's prepared to pay me a respectable salary. We have fantastic musicians. We have wonderful organs and pianos. And this choral society in Nassau specifically is very open to new and interesting things. So I get paid for fun. If I would have done this for free. It's too late to say it now. But I would have done it for free because it's what I love to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm getting paid by people to wave my hands and bring my expertise and to cause them to want to sing better and to teach them and to learn with them as it goes along. Because it's not about me specifically, although I tell people in my choir, it's all about me.
Yes.
Right?
He does say that.
It's all about me because I'm the choir director and there can't be more than one choir director at a time. And I say it in that context, but it's all about all the people that I encounter. I enjoy making music with people who are interested in making music and to raising the level of the musicianship in this country, either in a spiritual place like a church or the Dundas or at the National Arts Festival or any sort of place where we need to bring this culture up. Because music, people think it's a trivial thing, but it is far from trivial. It's the basis upon which all of us, the rhythm of our lives, it's based on music. Our lives are accompanied by tracks of music. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I do, absolutely.
It is tracks of music. Whether it's in your car, whether it's in your church, whether it's when you're jogging, there are tracks of music that accompany the way we live. And what I want to do, while I still have a chance to do it, is to elevate that so it isn't seemingly sounding like something that's tacky or something that you throw on the side. I want people to understand it takes a lot of work to do it well. And that is what I aim to do. And every time I get in front of a choir, in a rehearsal or in a performance or wherever it is, my aim is that when you're finished encountering me, like I encountered Clement Bethel. Clement Bethel called me to sit at his feet literally when I was 16. And that name, Clement Bethel, resounds throughout this whole society as someone who had that musical genius. I don't ascribe to be Clement Bethel, but I remember everything that Clement Bethel has ever said to me about musical excellence. And I'm hoping that when people say, oh, Adrian Archer, I remember he had this in his mind in terms of excellence and performance and articulation and phrasing and so forth. That's what I want to pass on. And that's why I'm here. That's what I'm in the world for. That's what I'm in the world for. And I'm convinced of it, and no one could tell me any different.
Now, to take all of that, so much I want to say in response to that, but then if I do that, then Matthew will have been right. And the show, then the show would just be about music and not some of the other things.
You don't want Matthew to be right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No,
okay, all right.
I don't think I ever want Matthew to be right.
Dear listener, the most important things. As espoused by Quincy.
Indeed, exactly. Right. So I'm going to set aside how much I want to respond to that on a personal level and go back to the question that I asked you at the beginning, which was how you would describe your journey from February through the end of the festival in July. What did you find? What did you see, and how did it make you feel?
Well, the National Arts Festival, this is my third year being the adjudicator for it. Of course, the first year we started, and then the pandemic came in its full force, so it had to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So it was scrapped. The second year, it was done digitally, And the third year, we started going and hitting the road again. So we've been to every island and key, literally, in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas that has a school or that has someone who has put in entrance. We've gone to one key and one person sang, and we jumped on a boat and went someplace else. That's how involved this whole program is and how serious the Ministry of Youth is in terms of making certain that no Bahamian child or no Bahamian adult in this instance is not allowed to participate in the National Arts Festival. So having said that, I've encountered, and I don't know how to say it without sounding distressed, I've encountered so many raw, naturally talented Bahamians that it is depressing. And it's depressing because, you know, you fly in, I'll give you an example. You flew into Abaco, and we literally fly into Abaco. You get on, the ministry organizes some sort of mode of transportation. You go from Crown Haven to here, to there, to there, to there in a day. You cannot, you judge people, and then you drive away. And I'm left every single spot, certainly every island, thinking, my God, why did I just leave? These people have no idea what they are, how talented they are. And will they ever be heard again? Will they ever sing again? How could we possibly make these people more than what they think they are? And I say that because they don't know what they are.
No, they don't.
They have no clue.
Yeah.
You know, just last week or 2 days ago, the Ministry of Youth sent me the national winners. And I sort of highlighted all in the music area. I thought to myself, oh God, yes, I remember this. Oh God, yes, I remember her. Oh God, I remember him. There's a guy at R&B, Chauncey, I want to say rhyming, I'm not certain his name. He got up and sang. And I closed my eyes and I thought, wow. And I did that over and over and over again. And every island and every school, you think to yourself, now this natural talent can't just be sitting here in these little jewel islands and doing nothing. It is depressing. That is the only way. And what do? We give them a little trophy. A little cheap trophy. Sorry, Ministry of Youth. A little trophy and say, congratulations, and that's it. You don't hear from them ever again. A young man in Long Island who sang from one of the Broadway plays, one of the Disney shows, under the, whatever that Under the Sea movie is. Sorry.
The Little Mermaid.
The Little Mermaid, yeah.
Right.
The Little Mermaid. So the character, the character who is the... what's her name?
Ariel?
No. The one that...
Ursula. Oh, he sang Poor and Fortunate
Souls? And he sang. Let me tell you something. He laid that flat. And this boy is 16. And I sat there thinking, Jesus, my God. But then it reminded me that I sat in Abaco and thought the same thing. And I sat in San Salvador and said the same thing. And I sat in Cat Island and said the same thing. And I sat in New Providence for 2 weeks straight and said the same damn thing. We have to find some way, my God, to channel, even if it's the national winners. Because obviously everybody can't do it. But even if at the end of all this process, the Ministry of Culture or the government, because the government funds all these things, to expose these children, one, to the rest of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and then say to yourself, now, this one is special in this area, and that one is special in that area, and can we get them off to school? Can we get them off to do even the basic voice training? Can we get them off to be exposed to what? What is going to happen to that young man from Long Island? Where he can go fishing? Come on! In the meanwhile, he could be on Broadway making $200,000 a year, or he could be in Clarencetown trawling fish. Man, nothing wrong with trawling fish.
You're saying, okay.
No.
You cut me off there.
Yeah, no, sorry. Because to be clear, right, and this is the thing that, okay, so I occasionally get accused of a level of arrogance because of some of the things that come flying out of my mouth, right? But I think I'm going to put all of that aside for the rest of this conversation. because you are 178% correct. This country cannot support the level of talent that exists in the country. There's nothing for these people to do. Mainly because Matthew won't pay them. Right?
Tell them to get out there and make me some money. And then I can pay them.
Never have I wanted to stab my More than I want to stab him right now. Right? But I remember listening to you just now. I remember living in Tulsa. When I graduated from ORU, I joined the Tulsa Opera. And I sang, you know, some small roles, and I was moving up in the cast, right? Every opera I had a bigger role, right, whatever the case may be. And I remember thinking to myself, nobody that I have sung with in the 2, 3, 4 years, it had been about 4 years by the time I really had this thought, nobody that I have sung with yet, including the people who came through Tulsa on their way to Dallas Opera, or on
Chicago
their way
Lyric.
To Chicago Lyric, or on their way to the Met,
right,
or La Scala, yeah, right? Jill Grove sang with us in Tulsa, right? And Stephanie Chase, these people, literally, you saw them like 2 months after they sang in Tulsa, they were on the cover of Opera News, mm-hmm, right? So nobody that I sang with, save those two in particular, in that four-year period, was hands down better than some of the people that I've been singing with my whole life in the Bahamas. So I know, having stood on an opera stage in a medium-sized market and singing with people who go on to the A-level markets, I know what that level of talent is like. And I'm thinking back to myself, and I could count on two hands 9 or 10 people who should have been,
yes,
on this stage,
yes,
doing this thing. I remember I made a couple of phone calls and you should come audition, you know, and the response that I got, which was a reasonable response from the person, the people at the time, was that, you know, I just started building a house, just got into a long-term relationship, don't want to mess up my life or whatever, right? And I'm sitting to myself thinking, but we always said we wanted to sing. We always said we wish we could be professional singers. And lo and behold, you got the talent. And I can prove it to you now. Just come and just sing. And I feel like we've been in the place that you're describing for 50 years with a group of people every year who bubbles up through the society, and there's nobody there to say, okay, I recognize that you're a world-class talent in XYZ. Here's how we're going to help you.
Right.
I don't know that it is the society's job to do that, you know, because, you know, the law of the jungle is that only the strong survive, right? You gotta, you only eat what you kill, whatever the case may be, however you want to put it. But at the same time, and this is one of the reasons I said to you, Matthew, this is not a music conversation, it's a culture conversation. This is not really about the fact that we have a group of musicians, potential musicians, and people who are actually practicing music, who have nowhere to turn to try to move to any kind of next level.
But it can't be the society, because it, like you said, a lot of genre clubs, but there has to be, you know, we cannot, I hate to mention the word the performing arts, mm-hmm, because what we think is the performing arts thing in this country is not even a joke, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think that perhaps at some point, you know, what the government has in its mind now, they keep talking about the orange economy and blah, 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 blah. But it's going to have to be until I see it. It may not be in this generation, but that recognition of this person, I mean, what Ministry of Culture has been doing for years, because I was in the National Arts Festival. I sang in it when I was in Oak Street Primary School in 1971. So we have had an opportunity from then until now to have a formal way to recognize the people who are the best of the best and take them someplace and show them something. Because here we are, we have all these people traveling all over this Jesus world, going here, thither, and yon, right? Instead of taking the winners of the festival and taking them on the road and showing them the real world and saying to them, if you want to be here, this is what it takes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
This is what it takes to be on the real stage. This is what the Met stage looks like. This is what going to sing, even at the Adrian Arts Center in Miami, feels like. Hit the road. Why then are teachers training students to go into this festival? So at the end of the day, when they win the festival, what they get is...
And a cheap trophy.
And a cheap trophy.
So I got a couple of questions. Let's begin with... So they shouldn't get the cheap trophy.
No, listen. and there's many trophies.
But seriously, you mentioned a disdain for the term performing arts, right? But at the same time, you speak of this deep well of raw talent that could be developed. And then you mentioned we've had, pushing 50 years in your estimation of time. Okay, so one, how do you reconcile this lack of, let me say it right, this lack of level of performance at a rigor that is world renowned with the fact that we have this deep well of potential? And then secondly, what does it say to you that you use the term we? You said we. Well, what you really mean is the powers that be, right? Be that the government and the private people with the money, etc., right? What does it say to you that 50 years down the line, we don't have what you think is a very simple thing that should be, regardless of the cost, should be implemented? There's a two-parter for you.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what I think. I think, first of all, that in the Bahamian society, music is considered your hobby. Mm-hmm. It's what you do when you ain't doing what it is that can cause you to live your life, or that can cause you to make money, or can cause you to dream to be a lawyer, or a policeman, or accountant, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What you do on the side, you know what I mean, is something that your parents take you to after school on a Saturday morning. And that permeates the way we think about the importance of that in our global thinking in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel. Because if my mother she took me to Muriel Mallory 3 days a week after I left Oaksfield Primary School. I went to teach, to go to music school. And if at the end of the day there was not an avenue for me to use that, it would just been a joke. But my avenue was to go and play at Sunday school, go into a place where I could use what I was learning on the side, because I wasn't taught this in Oaksfield Primary School. She realized that I couldn't get that sort of learning, and I was in Oaksfield Primary. I was, 10? I was studying with Miss Mallory since I must have was 8 or 9. And so at the end of the week, it was, tell me what you learned. Bring out your John Thompson theory book and let's go through that. Now, that's because she herself was a musician. You see? So unless you have from the parenting situation, that this actually, if you understand that you can make money at this, if you understand that in addition to whatever you think you want to be a doctor, but you're an excellent trumpeter, you may not at your age even understand what that means. But I'm going to investigate that and see. I'm telling you, when I came back from university and I was 42, older than that, I didn't even know what my degree could pay me until I was asked to come and work at Christ Church Cathedral. And when they said, what do you want for a salary? I have to admit, I think I answered, I don't know. So they said, what do you mean? You know, I never thought about it. So the person who asked me the Say, well, go back to your school and find out what a person your degree, your years of experience would make. And when I looked at it, I was embarrassed. And I was embarrassed, and I was the one who had studied it. I was embarrassed to say that price because it wasn't in the culture of my mind that a musician should be paid this kind of money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's something that's in our culture, that's in our thought, that it isn't possible for you to use this as a career.
It's not realistic.
It is not realistic.
Yeah.
It's realistic for you to go and play in the all-star band, but after you're old enough to come out that, then you're not. It's realistic for you to sing in the national choir, but when you pass 25 and 30, you got to come out the choir, and then what happens to your voice? Nothing. It's realistic for you to be in the national children's choir, but when you turn 60 and you have to come out of that, then what? Nothing. That is in our mind as this is something you do on the side for an extracurricular activity and fun,
yeah.
Not for what you could make your life of.
The last time we had this conversation, or not this conversation like this, it wasn't really even a conversation like this. It was just me bringing up the fact that Bahamian parents don't understand how much their children could make as musicians. I talked about the average salary for a clarinet player in a symphony orchestra, something like 70,000. But the first chairs at the big symphonies, they're making 200,000 plus a year to play clarinet.
Yep.
And the average salary of a trumpet player in the U.S. is about $60,000. First chair trumpet players in the orchestras are making more than $100,000 a year playing their trumpet, right? And I want to say that number again just to be very clear, because we have incredible trumpet players.
Exactly.
In this country.
Exactly.
They could be making between $60,000 and $100,000 a year playing their instrument in a mid-tier orchestra.
That's right.
They don't even have to play the New York Phil or the Berlin Philharmonic. They could play in the Tulsa Symphony. They could play in the Des Moines Orchestra.
And then in the symphony, you come home for 3 months and come back. You know what I mean? That's exactly what it is. That, Matthew, is where our disconnect is. Mm-hmm. Our disconnect is... We bring you up to study reading, writing, and arithmetic, but what you do on the side, you go to ballet, there's no way that you could actually be a prima ballerina because we don't want you to do that. We want you to do that for fun and jokes. We want you to play the piano and do your little recital, but then after that, put that down because that's not what we really want you to do in life. Even though you may be super talented. Just today, Candace Bostwick sang at the funeral of Alma Adams. The notes that Candace sang in this piece, How Great Thou Art. Candace ain't been to one vocal class in all of her years. If Candace, and every time I hear her, I have to curse her. If Candace went to my school and had a voice professor, like the many, my own Julian Rodescu, God rest her dead, sang at the operas at stage at La Scala. She did a class with him, she would be a different person entirely. And Candace been singing in the national choir since she was, what, 12 or 13? And now Candace is a grown woman with children who are actually now on the stage. What? I'm not saying that she has missed it, but what could Candace have been had Candace had the opportunity, had someone said, listen, you, as Fred Fleischer did to me, he called me out. He said, if you direct one more piece of music and not even audition to go to school, you and I are going to fall out. Every time I saw him, somebody has to say, you have it, and you have to figure out how to make it more than what you have. And that, in this instance, has to be a performing arts society or theater or something that has to be established with the rules. And that's why I said, this is why I said it's a dirty word, because what we think... it's performing arts. What has been proposed to be a performing arts theater is a joke, which is why I'm hoping, of course, the conversation has come up again about performing arts, this and that and next.
Does it?
That with teachers and lecturers who know exactly how to get people from one stage to the next is what we require. And since we have had all these years of national arts winners, and not just singers, painters and dancers and trumpeters. Every category of performing arts in this country is covered by the performing by the national art. You know, when I was in it, it was just singing. Mm. Now it's painting. Now, we went to Abaco, and these painters at this school, my God, they set up the whole classroom with works done by these little children. And I thought to myself, my God. You know what I mean? My God, and we have all these places in Nassau and the Central Bank and this and that and the next, and I'm bringing in all these creators. What is happening?
Yeah.
There got to be a place to display these things. There has to be a place, even if, Quincy, listen, even if, and I've said this to Sonovia Pierre, she's the coordinator of it, and I've written this down in a recommendation as adjudicator. Whatever couple of dollars it takes, mm-hmm. when this thing is finished and the national winners and all the categories are announced, there should be a place where we should all go and celebrate them, since we spending money at Bahama like dirt, old stuff. Then drag us all out there and fly these people in. These are Bahamians. Fly them in. Let Bahamas there sponsor them. Fly them in. Let them perform for the nation to see. At least they're incentivized to say that we work towards something.
Yeah.
Rather than just working and then go home. This is madness.
So what you have proposed seems to me like it can't be that no one has thought of that. Right?
Well, listen, this is the 50th year of independence. 50th year, right? I said, listen, this is the 50th anniversary year. Okay, so we can't have these people for the 50th anniversary various events, because of course we don't know who the winners are until after it. But we're still in the 50th year. Right?
Yes.
50th year till July of next year. So every government event, this is my idea, where there's someone singing the national anthem, someone singing some stupid piece of entertainment, whatever it is, grab one of these people and say, this person is a national award winner in JR Primary School Choir 1, or solo voice, or on Broadway, or in jazz. That's what you do. But that's
never mind. I care.
It is clear, Adrian, that Matthew's chuckling. But it's clear.
I don't think Matthew expected this conversation at all.
I think he did. It's clear that you see. Okay, I'm going to say the less obvious thing. It is equally clear that what is not clear to the people who have the paycheck authority or the money authority in terms of the government infrastructure, right, to be able to facilitate what you've just proposed, it is not clear to them that there is any value in that. That much is obvious. It is equally clear and obvious that the Bahamian parent is clueless as to the real value of allowing their children to pursue their calling.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. To pursue their calling. Because this culture is one of belittling itself. We will accept somebody else making a living playing their trumpet, but we will not accept a Bahamian doing so in the Bahamas, certainly. I mean, if he have to go out of the country and do it, well, you know, fine, and we'll stick our flag on his back and pretend like we give a shit. Give a damn.
Yeah.
But we don't actually intend or expect for that to be duplicated throughout the country. And I say that without worrying that I'm wrong, because it's been 50 years since we were in charge of how the government money gets spent and what the government scholarships are for and how the government spending relates to the culture that we're living in. And you and I are having this conversation today. This conversation should not be a thing.
No, I agree with you.
After 50 years of self-rule.
I absolutely agree with you.
But it's a real thing.
I absolutely agree with you.
Matthew?
More so than that being a condemnation of our quote-unquote leaders, I think...
Oh, I want to be clear, I was also condemning parents, not just leaders.
Yeah, I actually think they're less to blame than the people for whom such passion can be evoked, such as us around this table, such as the practitioners and those with the potential to be great practitioners, right? We got to get our crap together.
Yes.
Okay? And the fact that stuff has not been happening, and the fact that we need certain amount of resources, it does not negate the fact that what little we can and should do for ourselves, have we been able to collectively get our act together and do. So, I don't disagree with what you all are saying, right? But I'm trying to take this log out of my own eye before I try to take the stick out of the politicians and certain other people, be they in the arts, let's call it community or not, including people who claim to appreciate these things, but don't either try to support in a way that is more than, oh, I can come and see your little performance on Wednesday night at the jazz night at XYZ Club, right? And other things that I could get into, but I don't want to get in too much trouble right now.
I hear you, and on some of what you have said, I agree. Just to be clear, you have a log in your eye. I only have a speck in mine.
No. The problem is, you looking in the mirror, and the log in your eye could only let you see the speck in the other one.
Yeah, that's
what he was my boy. That's why I could tell you that.
let me get this for 1 second.
Archer trying to make sure I don't get my hair tear off right now.
I really do think that, you know, we have to... The guys have said it's funny. There are specific responsibilities that members of the society have.
Absolutely.
Right? Parents have specific responsibilities. The government has specific responsibilities. And those of us who are in the private sector. I'm the vice chairman of the Dundas Theatre. Right? And so the Dundas Theatre has put on for the last year, every month, a Bahamian play to celebrate the independence of the Bahamas. So we have exposed playwrights, actors, actresses, directors, etc. for 1 year, every month, for the past year. Not foreign plays, our own plays. Okay? And until you have organizations like that, that are going to find and identify people and say, you have never done it before. I have never been on the stage before. I was actually on the stage. I'm always behind the stage. I've never been in a play in my life. And someone said, well, what about you? So I did it as an example to show some others that it's possible to do. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is, when you get to people like us in the Dundas and people like us who are in the private sector, I have no problems identifying some of the people I've seen over the last year and bring them to my church and sing a soloist in my cathedral, because my cathedral is a high-profile church. And so in addition to me saying, boy, congratulations, you did a good job, I find them. I find their teacher and say, listen, that one, I am hiring. This is what I say now. Not coming and singing for free. I'm hiring them to come and sing in the mass. Sir. Because that is what that is what their potential is.
I want to, first of all, up front say that I applaud that and I respect that. And I also want to go on record as saying there is so much I want to say right now that I am going to hold back on.
No,
because no. Because
it goes without saying.
Because we got to have you back. We got to have you back for a different conversation regarding the broader art scene, performing art scene. Okay. Particularly around theater.
Matthew is co-founder of Track Road Media?
No. I was just very involved in the organization.
So he, director and actor and writer as well, I'm sure?
A little bit.
Yeah. So he's a theater guy. And needless to say, one of these days we'll unpack that particular Pandora's box. But
I don't know. Pandora's box is famous for releasing all of these horrors into the world. But what is often missed is the fact that there is one thing left in the box, and it is hope. So while it is an explanatory fable, and one that looks at how bad things are in the world, it's also one that says, hey, but, you know, this too shall pass. Things could get better. There's always hope still in Pandora's box. And I say that to say that I don't know if it's a Pandora's box because I don't particularly see that down there.
You don't think there's any hope?
That is questionable. I'm not saying it's not there. Wow. I'm saying that from my current perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And not due to the environment. Well, due to us being part of the environment. We shoot ourselves in the foot. That's my perspective. As a collective.
You're absolutely right.
Is he absolutely right or is he partially right?
Well, he's right in that way because we create these things and then we don't know how to take them to a level where they can be fully appreciated. So in that instance, you shoot yourself. So, okay, we only could take you but so far. And then after that, the very idea that you could be more than what you are is not something that I would like to see you be. Which is, you know, it's the way, and I'm sorry, and I don't want to use this because I don't like this term, this black crab. So I hate that term. Mm-hmm. But I could understand in a lot of ways, because in sometimes in our society, you don't want to see other people do well. I don't know why that is. I'm not saying it's...
I assure you, you would know better than I, being far more well-traveled. But that's a phenomenon of humans, period. In other places, they call it tall poppy syndrome,
and on.
You know. So while we definitely... I think we should work against that. Let's not... overburden ourselves that we are
more evil than others.
Yeah, you know, humans.
The problem is, but that sounds like we're letting ourselves off the hook, though, Matthew.
I want us to be honest, but also not make up things that aren't there to make ourselves feel bad. You know, like this is how it is. We are just dumb humans who have not gotten together to think things through. Create a vision and consistently push towards it. That's all it is.
No, I disagree. I don't think that's all it is.
Okay, well then I blame the Jameson.
How could you blame the Jameson? It's a beautiful, wonderful scotch.
No, it is beautiful. But, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. And perhaps me seeing a glimmer of hope in the world is me, you know, thinking that the Pandora's box does exist around theater. Or the wider performing arts. I apologize, sir.
No.
I am deeply sorry, and I hope you...
Forgive me.
Forgive us. Yes.
Given that we are in the presence of someone who holds a rather high position in a rather high-profile church, mm-hmm. I believe that forgiveness is a foregone conclusion.
Indeed.
In this... present moment.
Indeed.
Yeah. Whether that is genuine and sincere forgiveness or whether it is the form of godliness but lacking the power thereof.
We'll find out next episode, if there is one.
There will, of course. Okay, so I wouldn't keep you much longer here, Adrian. I promised you only an hour. So the last question that I have for you is, you've seen, the reason that I wanted to have this conversation and focus, initially, on the National Arts Festival is because it's a nationwide thing, right? And because it has given you an opportunity to see the country from top to bottom and to be able to say, I think with a fair degree of confidence, that this is an incredibly talented nation, and that's genuinely what I believe. I think pound per square inch, I think the Bahamas is more talented than other places.
There's no doubt about that.
I'm prepared to be challenged, but I'm not prepared to be wrong.
No,
I think we are. I just think we're more talented, and I wonder what our responsibility, if that is true, then what is our responsibility? How are we supposed to respond to that?
Well, you know, there's no doubt that certainly what I've seen in terms of the talent, I mean, even the bad talent is good talent. You know what I mean? When I said that, I mean, you know, when you are adjudicating and you're grading a person for their singing or whatever it is, or choir or whatever it is, you know, they're, you don't say, oh, that really sound good. Oh, that really sound bad. There's a grading sheet. Mm-hmm. Is the diction good? Is the articulation good? Is the phrasing right? Is the da-da-da-da-da? So you can actually tell people to work on this or that. I have not come across one entrant, and I'm trying to think in the last 3 years, where I thought to myself, why did this teacher even think to embarrass him or herself by submitting this foolishness?
Yeah.
Now I have thought to myself, why did they come dressed like that? I've thought that to myself. Why did they didn't come, you know, like they come into a performance, like they come into a competition? Because that's what it is. You know, I've thought that to myself. Mm-hmm. But when they open up their mouth, you know, although there's a bit that says appearance, generally speaking, everybody gets a 10 out of 10 because everybody's either in their uniform or they come dressed to portray what it is they're singing or whatever. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple who look like they come out right out of their bed and you think, come on, you know what I mean? Teachers know that this is a competition. You ain't competing with just yourself. Mm-hmm. You can be with every, and we said when we get to every stop, you're competing with every single child in the nation. So don't come thinking that thinking about just you and Harbor Island or just in Eleuthera. You're going to compete against them in Nassau and Free. And there are some schools that will blow your mind. I mean, St. George's High School in Grand Bahama, they don't play that game. I mean, every time they have a folk song, they change their... They have a different look. They have their own dressing coach, the whole work. So some come ready for the war, as we say. They come ready, and they know their competitions are. They know Freeport High. They know the R.M. Bailey. They ask questions. And, of course, since the show is streamed, you could see some people. You could see some of your performance before it's your time to perform. So they know that, you know, this ain't just a little joke. So the end of the game shouldn't be a joke. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That if teachers are warned a year in advance, the festival is coming up, we're going to be in your island, XYZ dates, this is a set piece for your thing, this is your optional pieces, you have all this time to prepare. And now sometimes it does fall through, some teachers they know what's going on, and people, we show up and they don't know what's, but if they know and they're preparing their choirs, and you could tell those who are prepared, everybody knows that you didn't practice this yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, so if all that work is being done, then at the end of the game, there should be something that says, because you have made the effort to be the best, this is what you get. This, you get exposed to the rest of the country.
Yeah.
You get your treat, and I hate it because I know something, you get your little trophy, You get your plaque for the being the best. But in addition to that, you get a chance to be seen by the public. You get a chance perhaps to come and meet the governor. I mean, the governor, what are those things that we are aiming for to get? And perhaps along the way, you run into a Quincy Parker or an Adrian Archer or someone who's been to school who may have a connection. You know what? You really should audition for this. That's how I got there. You really should take your painting and take it to the central bank, to the curators, and say, hey, I won this in the National Arts Festival. What do you think? You really should be able to have someone who leads you to the place where they think that you're able to step your game up somewhat. Mm-hmm. I got that opportunity. If I was working at the Ministry of Culture, whatever they was going to pay, before I forget, there should be a Ministry of Culture. This whole idea of the Ministry of Youth, Sports and Culture, Education and Culture, Tourism, Investments and Culture, that is a bunch of bull. Can I say that word?
You can.
Shit. I'm sorry.
What happened, Matthew?
I'm sorry. And that's the problem right there, Quincy. Mm-hmm. If there was a Ministry of Culture whose job it is not to worry about, oh my God, is the Thomas A. Robinson, God rest my good uncle's soul, stadium up the park because we have a game in X month. So whatever couple of dollars we have to pay for that stadium. No. That's foolishness. It's foolishness. When there's a Ministry of Culture, there's a permanent secretary of culture.
Yes.
There's a director of culture. There's a staff of culture. And when their name call, what is the Ministry of Culture doing? Not what the Ministry of Sports and Youth and Culture, because that poor man, Mario Boleg, God bless his soul. He loves culture. Other than what his cultural director... No, I'm serious. I'm not saying anything against him. He's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
But right. Even if you have to have someone, this is when you know you're serious. You don't have someone along your slate who could be a Ministry of Culture, but you get one in the Senate and who know about culture, make them a Minister of Culture and a Ministry of Culture. Otherwise, it'll never get the kind of attention it needs to get. And the culture is what makes the Bahamas what it is. You know, we could play games as much as we want. Who we are is our culture. That's what we are developing. That's why we're losing it, because we have mixed up with too much rubbish and there's not sufficient emphasis on the culture, on the landscape, yeah,
this,
on
this
the...
This sounds like this can be three podcasts.
I mean,
we have to put you back in for another conversation about culture.
We don't do it. We don't do it, and it is so important. It is terribly, terribly important. And when I drive up and down, and I say to myself sometimes, my God, these kids...
Yeah.
If you are not I'm deliberate,
sure you gentlemen are fairly well connected in society. Do you not have airs?
Stop.
No. I don't mean that you could pull out your cell phone and direct dial the prime minister. That's not what I mean. But but you all know people. how is this conversation not? I plead that I do not. But how is this conversation not more elevated in the halls of power? That's what I don't understand.
That starts us down a road.
Yeah, I mean, that's next podcast.
That's the
one following that,
or the
actually.
One following, yeah.
Because
Matthew doesn't say this often, that we'd have to have you back. So that means that we definitively have to have you back.
You sure you want to do that?
Oh yeah.
No, I
can say that.
I pass sure.
It'd be really problematic.
I don't think that.
Well, as Quincy is want to remind me, problematic how?
Exactly.
Quincy don't care.
We want to smoke. We ready all the time.
All right.
What is it that Calusi says? I don't want peace. I want problems. Always. All right. So thank you very much, Adrian, for your candor, your insight. I think that this is the start of a real hard but necessary conversation. I think when people hear this conversation, you probably can get some phone calls. I know I'm going to get some phone calls. But I'm looking
Nobody
forward to
got
that.
My number.
I might give them your number.
SIM cards are only $15.
No, but it's necessary.
Change the number.
Get a new one.
Change, got it. Yeah, yeah, I got you. No, but I think it'll be necessary because the reality is it hasn't had a champion.
No, that's exactly it.
You know?
That's exactly it. That he asked the question, and that's exactly it. Yeah. It hasn't had a Clement Bethel since he died, mm-hmm. who was the first director of culture. It hasn't had. It's had a number of directors of culture, including good friends of mine, that's right, Nicolette Bethel and Cleophas Adderley. But you know, Nicolette will say, you know what? I give up. Clement would have cursed you out. See, that you has had his champion. That's what it is, right there. Someone who could say, you know what, all this is rubbish. This is complete rubbish, and you guys are full of it. You know what I mean? And someone who will say it, and people will say, oh my God, I can't believe he said that, type of a person.
Yeah.
And that's what it needs. It needs a minister like that. It needs a prime minister like that, who understands. And who could say, you know what, Ministry of Finance, you can need $100,000, $200,000, and I don't care what else you're doing. Whatever else you're doing, that money there is for that program. And that's it. Now, who else got to suffer? I work in the government for 25 years. I know how government finances go, right? So they prioritize on a whim.
Yes.
They prioritize on a whim. Particularly this 50th year, all the many things we had to spend money on. Okay? So, okay.
People ain't eating.
All right then. So big 50th parties, big balls here, big this, that. Okay, good. But now what? Now what? Now what? 50 years later, these same people, some of these people who are passing through, are just going on the wayside. Quincy, I'm telling you, I looked at that list yesterday when I got it from Sonovia, and I said, Jesus, my God. And I thought to myself, what could I do? How could I expose these people? What does it take to just fly these people on a national airline? But don't cost a pit. Well, of course, Bahamas is a couple of dollars. To fly them in on a weekend and say, everybody come out for free since you're going everywhere else for damn free. Come out for free and listen to the winners of the National Arts Festival. How difficult is that to do? I could do that in a week. That's not difficult to organize once you have the wherewithal and the money to do it. But, you know. Sorry.
No, not to be sorry for. But I think, as you say, you know, we need to identify, let me rephrase.
And I think the champions, the champions in past are just exhausted.
Yeah, for sure.
They're exhausted. Sure. They're exhausted. They're talking from one set of administration to the next about what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, what we can do, okay? The board done this theater ain't open yet. Come now.
You got money for how many concerts on Green Street?
Come.
But you can't fix the AC and the roof at the Dundas.
Come now.
I won't even talk about that.
We don't talk about that. That's why I think he realized when I said performing arts that I was depressed about that.
Yes.
Because that was identified.
You should be depressed about a whole lot more.
About a performing arts theater.
Yeah.
That gave you that told you right there and then what people thought about the whole idea of performing and arts in the Bahamas.
That it still says...
But they don't say performing. Thank God. A couple of letters fall off, so you can't tell what it was meant to be.
Yeah. All right. We got to stop it there, or else we can keep going. Again, thank you, Adrian.
Welcome.
And I look forward to the next conversation. Matthew, any final words?
Bon chance, performing arts community.
Yes, yes indeed. That's Zarovia. Yeah.